Oh shit. Oh shit. It's going off now.
Highway Diaries. Hello, Mama Love.
Hi, baby love.
I'm the eagle.
Oh.
You're Mama Love. Remember that's your handle?
Okay.
So, what's going on? You're a DIFAS worker. You work for the Division of Youth and Family Services in New Jersey.
Which is now called Division of Child Protection and Permanency.
Oh, what's the acronym?
DCPP.
DCPP? So DIFAS is out of
date. DIFAS is out.
That's not.
But I'm not supposed to talk about my job.
You're not supposed to talk about. Mama Love, let's move on to a different subject.
Is when we were having dinner in the winter time at the kitchen table, you were constantly looking at your reflection in the window of our bay window that was in the kitchen. So you purposely sat opposite the bay window so that you could make faces throughout dinner and notice how your face looked like in the reflection of the window.
Yeah, I would just like sing and like look at how I... Just sing and be like, who's that? Who are you? Who are you? And I was just looking at three of my own reflection.
Because
I was insane. I was trying out my faces.
Your father was always trying to stifle that because... Yeah.
He was like, have conversations with the people that are here. Not the people in your head.
Not with your reflection in the glass.
You know, now I live in Los Angeles and you are here. You're in the you're on the podcast. How'd you get here? What's going on?
Came to visit my baby.
Uh-huh. So we went to the Venice Canals.
Correct.
What'd you think of them? What if you were, you know, a travel expert saying, asking people if they, and people are like, oh, what are the Venice Canals like? How would you explain?
It's a very romantic spot. Very beautiful. It's like a Monet painting to see the Venice Canals. I have a book for you that I forgot to bring you. I don't know if I mentioned to you. Where it's the 100 most romantic places to kiss in LA, in the Los Angeles area.
Mom's a little worried about me because I don't have a girlfriend right now and she's trying to give me... Oh, you know, the issue is not that you're like super dedicated to comedy and like at open mics every night. That's not the issue of... the reason why I don't have a girlfriend is because I don't know the spots to kiss. So this book's got 100
And like
of them.
I always tell you, I think it's important to make time for romance.
It's a problem. I got to schedule it in. Eh, we'll see what happens in July. What's Muscle Beach?
Where guys show off their muscles.
They're just working out.
You did a good job in the Santa Monica Pier, Muscle Beach. Swung like a monkey from ring to ring.
Yeah. So, how was mini golf? We also did that. And we went to an arcade a little bit. You almost had a seizure looking at the screen of a racing game. It was a little overstimulating for you.
It was.
And it kind of made you have to go to the bathroom.
Because I didn't like, you know, almost crashing.
It got you a little motion sick and that kind of moved your bowels. So then... But then, yeah, we played some mini golf, and that was tight. It was like 62 to 63 or something like that.
You didn't then know your mom was such a good miniature golfer.
Yeah. I blame the course. I didn't really like how it was set up, and I don't know, you had some lucky shots, so it was close.
So you took your first son, Monica, Ferris wheel ride
mama. That's true. Is this one of the 100 greatest romantic places to kiss?
And unfortunately, you took your mom.
Yeah.
To the top of the Ferris wheel.
Yeah. Next time, I gotta take a date.
You've also, last time I was in LA, you took me to a Beverly Hills party.
Yes.
On Valentine's Day.
That's
true.
Your date. That's true. Every time you come, you're my date. I do agree with you. I need that book. I don't know the place to kiss. That's the issue.
It's not supposed to be with your mother.
What am I doing? We went to... So I made this thing called Pets of the Rich and Famous. I was this story producer of that. And the lady who was featured prominently in that is, you know, kind of a... I don't want to use the term trophy wife because that is very exactly what's going on here. She's a trophy wife. And she lives in a, you know, big mansion. She wrote a book, How to Catch a Rich Man. So that's a red herring in the relationship.
And so I read the book, and what did I tell you? It happened to me on the flight over here.
Yeah, you got a card. You started using the things you learned in that book.
I use the things I learned in the book.
What are the things they teach you in the book? How do you get a rich man, Ma?
By being very attentive to a rich man.
Mm-hmm.
So by asking that rich man a lot of questions about himself, because we all know that rich men like to talk about themselves. Mm-hmm. So if you give them the opportunity to talk only about themselves, you can catch a rich man.
All right.
Not that I would want to spend the rest of my life listening.
But that's just how you hook them in.
Right.
You want to pump up his ego a little bit, have him feel good, and then, you know.
Rich old man.
Rich old man. So you got a phone number.
Mm-hmm. And a potential for a date upon my arrival home.
There you go. Call him up. See what's going on. Did you give him your number as well?
I did.
Oh, so it's, you know, are you going to wait 3 days?
I'm in L.A., honey. I can't. He was here.
Did you give him the house number or what's...
I gave him my home.
Have a cell phone number?
But I gave him my home number.
Oh, okay. Maybe there'll be a message waiting for you.
Maybe.
Beep, beep. Okay, no, this is inappropriate for our listeners. So I'll be a rich guy. You use the techniques from this book, How to Catch a Rich Man.
I think that's not appropriate.
Anyway, I was just in Belize on my yacht, and boy, it's hard to get a good shipmate these days. Oh, hello. too much.
What kind of shipmate are you looking for?
Oh, well, temptress. Wow, you have a lot of techniques. I'm paralyzed with love. Wow, that was quick, Ma. Well done. Seems like it's working out for you. So what's going on with my lifestyle right now? You know, you weren't sure. You haven't seen me in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, when you come to visit your 27-year-old son, it's like, you know, it might be like, hey, you're a loser, or, you know, you're not sure exactly what's going on.
I'm very proud of my son.
What's going on?
The problem with my son, who I'm sitting here with, is that he doesn't understand that it's very hard for mom to turn off her mama role.
We've had a few conversations
off
mic about, you know, trying to baby me too much.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to give me too much advice along the way, maybe.
And you've rebelled from that.
I'm an adult. I'm an adult now. And you're under my goddamn roof right now. So you know what?
I have to play by your rules.
Exactly.
Which means no guidance from the mom.
Tough love. Gotta give you tough love, Ma, or you'll never learn. You saw me do stand-up when I was 17 mm-hmm. in the Comedy Cellar on a Bringer show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I bombed, if I remember.
You never bombed.
I think I definitely bombed in front of you once really hard.
Yeah. I remember the MC saying, I can't believe this mom, your mom, Eric, is laughing at you telling all these dirty jokes. What kind of mom do you have?
Now you haven't seen my stand-up in 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it.
Gotten a lot filthier, to be honest. It's pretty crazy.
I'm a little nervous.
And you've been drinking tea and stuff so that you're not falling asleep. We're trying to time your sleep cycles so that you're not snoozing during it.
Because, as I told you, 9:30 when your show starts is 12:30 in New Jersey.
And that's like 5 hours past your bedtime.
5 hours. Everybody knows. I'm like clockwork. And what was my motto when you were growing up? Early to bed, early to rise.
Mm-hmm. Don't tell the cops I punch you in your eyes.
Do you think that your parents did anything as parents to inspire you to be a comedian?
Absolutely. And I think I've told you this before. I realized that you were allowed to break the rules if you made the parents laugh. And that was incredible motivation to me. Because I remember one time where Emily did an impression of you. We weren't allowed to swear. But I remember very young, Emily and I got together and said, okay, we're allowed to swear, and then we don't tell on each other. And then we went, deal. So we always swore behind your backs, but never in front of you guys. And then, you know, but sometimes you would drop a glass and yell, shit! And then Emily once started just screaming, like, shit, shit, shit! And then it made you and Dad laugh so much, and my jaw dropped, and I was like, why isn't Emily getting in trouble right now? She's screaming shit.
And she's swearing, which is against her rules.
Exactly. But you guys laughed, and I realized that if you make someone laugh, they can't get angry. So then it's like I kind of based, then I was like, I want to learn that skill. I want to make people, you know, like me, I guess, based on making them laugh, you know? And then, I don't know, just got implanted somehow. A light bulb went off, and I think that's what I wanted to do.
But do you think that you had parents that inspired your creativity?
I think you guys were very, very supportive, I'd say.
Do we ever hinder your comedic genius in you? Did we stifle you in any way, or did we embrace your comedy? And
I think you guys embraced my comedy, and you both, and you know, the whole family likes dirty jokes, and so there was never like, you know, I mean, you haven't heard my stuff in a while, but I'm probably sure I've said crazier shit in front of you before, and you know what I mean? So.
And as long as I laughed, you weren't in trouble.
Exactly. That's the goal. And that's really what society, you know, it's like, that's why it's so powerful. But yeah, and you guys were always supportive coming to my Upright Citizens Brigade shows. I definitely remember you guys would make trips into the city, you know, to watch my shows.
You always told me I wasn't allowed to sit in the front row, though.
Yeah.
Despite that was the place I wanted to sit.
The front row is the only row of people that you can see. So I said, I don't mind if you're out there. I just don't want to see your face when I'm going to make a choice, you know, when I'm going to make an improv choice. I just don't want to know, how is this going to affect my mom? Like, it's just too much. Just go in the third row. Some people might remember, maybe 15 episodes back, the Eagle and Tiger Bomb were having a conversation about you being in the backyard one time, and we shined the spotlight on you when you got, and Dad were skinny dipping. There was another time you reminded me earlier, something happened where I wasn't home. Nobody was home. The parents had the pool to themselves. They thought, bingo, hello. We're going to skinny dip. And kids in the house.
First, we just drank a couple rum punches in our own backyard on our deck.
Well, yeah. The romance.
It was a hot summer evening. The kids were out of the home.
No chance of them shining a spotlight in our face when we're skinny dipping.
So we thought we knew when they were all coming home, which was hours later.
Mm-hmm.
And what should happen, but somebody comes through the gate, unannounced, asking where our son Eric was while we were skinny dipping in our own pool. In our own private pool that was very private because of all the trees and the shrubbery and the fencing. But the girls you dated just had no sense of boundaries. So she came barging right through the gate.
And
asked where Eric was.
And then, on Monday, on the bus ride, a mutual friend of that girlfriend and me, like, we took the bus together, you know, and then she, like, popped up in front of me and was like, so, your parents were skinny dipping. I was like, what?
Eric would have no idea.
Yeah.
His conservative parents would.
You guys tried to sweep it under the rug, and then I heard it on the bus. I felt really uncomfortable.
Finding out that your parents were
trying to piece the evening together. What the hell happened?
Finding out from
yeah,
a friend on the bus that your parents were freaks.
Freaks. That's a rough place to find out on the school bus. That your parents are nudist swinger freaks.
And we didn't have any other couple in the backyard with us. We didn't tell you. We told you that the girlfriend showed up and... But we didn't tell you that we were, that your girlfriend showed up, came through our gate.
Right.
And had found us.
Yeah, you left some details out.
Of the evening.
Yeah, the message was, stop by. The message wasn't, stop by, caught us naked. Piece of information would have been helpful. Mama love,
Yes, we
thanks for visiting and thanks for doing the podcast.
Okay. Thank you, Eric.
Highway Diary continues. And I'm here with my man, Stephen G.
Hello.
Stephen G is an expert in the next thing we're going to talk about. That's because right. He speaks Korean.
I do. He... 저 한국말 합니다.
Whoa! What the hell does
what did
that
he
mean?
Say? Probably said that he speaks Korean in Korean.
Wow, that would be a very linear way to deal with this.
That's how Koreans are. They're linear, so.
Yeah, yeah. So, I have a little theory that I've been... well, also a theory slash been developed by paranoid people on the internet that mm-hmm. I listen to.
Okay.
Called conspiracy theories.
Right. Which, there's, you know, 100% accurate.
There's a conspiracy theory about Kim Jong-il that I'm kind of developing slash I'm taking bits and pieces.
I'm interested.
Here's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
The people who own the Federal Reserve, you know, their bank and things,
mm-hmm.
what they like is chaos to bring the property value down. And so they give Kim Jong, the Kim Jong dynasty family, a certain stipend every year
mm-hmm.
in order to run their country and just to scare people on mm-hmm. on TV. On
well,
the CNN.
Yeah.
And so then they go, here's a certain amount of money, put on a crazy outfit, look like some kind of Liberace general, spike your hair on the sides, and go, wow, there's nuclear weapons, we're going to test a missile today.
Mm-hmm.
And all the stipend basically goes to blowing smoke up your ass with a paper government, and you take all the money and give your subjects a very small trickle of the rest of the money, because basically you want a country that worships you as your first and foremost mm-hmm. thing, the Kim Jong family,
right.
and could give a shit less about any of their people.
Do you believe that the Americans are funding North Korea for something?
To be this, like, scary figure.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Americans, the ancient alien families who own the fucking
Federal Reserve.
Yeah,
but the Federal Reserve is, you're saying, like a world bank, like a world bank.
Yeah.
I have no idea about world banks.
The basis of the currency of you know, our currency used to say, like, this dollar is redeemable for gold, like $5 worth of gold. Now your money says a Federal Reserve note, and the Federal Reserve is a bunch of private foreign banks. So foreign banks own the basis of what American money is. So these are kind of, you know, the wheelers and dealers, the puppet masters behind the presidents and stuff. The secret government doing weird shit. And what I'm saying is, one of the weird shits they're doing mm-hmm. is saying, hey, Korea, just have the crazy guy make a lot of threats and really have, and we'll give you a certain amount of money. You know, $1 billion a year, have a very nice harem of women, and come... And
that
then
sounds very plausible.
Let him become this crazy
for
dictator,
sure.
And all he does is spend the money on his own lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that he helicopters in lobsters from Maine onto a train. Like, he was on a train.
I would do that.
And then he helicoptered in Maine lobsters mm-hmm. to land on the roof of his train so he could have fresh lobster.
I gotta tell you, it's just Korean culture. That's really what it is. It boils down to just
tell
Korean
me about this.
Culture.
You can tell a Korean culture, hey, live poor, but anyway, Kim Jong-il's
Kim
God.
Kim Jong-il, though,
have a nice life.
Is God. Like, he has indoctrinated his people
yeah.
into thinking that he is God. Like, for instance, if someone goes over there that's from, like, India, okay, let's say, and he's, like, an eye doctor, and he goes and, like, does this simple surgery to, like, fix, like, maybe 100 or 200 North Korean people's eyes for free, you know, and just says, okay, I just want to help out. Because all it is really just doing, like, some kind of little science that's not even, like, some little science that is just for the rest of the world completely known, and it's
a little science, a 15-minute procedure. He comes in, he shoves
boom,
a scalpel
boom, boom.
In your eye, you're
yeah.
out the door in 15 minutes,
okay,
and you can
yeah,
fucking
exactly.
see.
Right, yeah. So, like, hooray. But who do they think? Who would they think? They wouldn't think the doctor. They wouldn't be like, doctor, thank you for doing
no,
all this.
No, definitely the doctor, because he just did that procedure for free.
Yeah.
Because he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
They
well,
would thank
they,
the doctor.
They would think Kim Jong Il or Kim Jong-un or whoever's in power. That's who they think, because that's who their leader is, you know? And
that's who their god is.
It's a sheep mentality, and, like, it's one person's the, you know, one person. That's it. And boom, and that's how it is. Yeah. That's how they live, because that's all they know.
Mm-hmm. So, but South Korea is a totally different thing.
South Korea is very capitalistic, but also... all governments are, it's corrupt. It's like every government has its own, like, problems. Because it's government.
Do you think that the North Korean mentality of, you know, be poor, but work very hard and have a decent life, and just kind of sheep follow the leader mentality is in the South Korean people as well, only to a lesser extent?
I think that's... to all people have a, like, you know, if I start doing this and, or, like, nodding my head or in an area where there are people that are, like, paying attention, they start nodding their head too, you know, it's just ingrained into us as humans.
So you're saying just, like, in the subtle ways, just like a pigeon will just coo and nod just like, and bob its head.
Yeah.
That's what the people do.
If you bob it, because in the end, we're all just monkeys.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What other ways, like, you know, be it, did you, you've been to Korea a few times?
I have. I've been to South Korea, like, 3 times in my life.
And you were saying that your English is very attractive to them. The fact that you're bilingual and kind of Americanized, you were saying.
I don't know. I'm not going to say yes or no on that.
Come on, man. You could talk about that.
I don't know. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, the girls, they're definitely like, oh, you're not... like every other guy here. So right. It's cool. Yeah.
Dude, I can tell you, just being an American in Germany.
Oh, yeah?
It was unbelievable. Yeah. They liked American accents.
Fucking love going.
Because they like American movies, mm-hmm. and I had a certain sense of humor or whatever. And, dude, I was pulling out my league left, right, and center.
Nice.
Yeah.
Gotta go get that German. I would do anybody. So, as long as I was attracted to them.
Right, of course. Yeah. Well, that's beautiful.
That's beautiful.
But it's like, if you have that advantage, use it.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. if you have a good accent, like, I should be in Germany right now. I'm not using my thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyway, you're super powerful.
Oh, there he is. He's
okay.
Right there.
Oh, we have to pick up some guy. Yeah. All right, hang on. Well, stay for the ride. This is Highway Fucking Diaries. People are used to going on adventures.
Yeah, let's just fucking go.
We're picking up a friend right now.
No,
he just got off
Brandon.
A bus. His name's Brandon.
Brandon!
Brandon! He doesn't... Hold on.
Wait, that might not be Brandon.
That's not
that
Brandon.
Brandon. That looked like Brandon.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry, Brandon.
I had such a good parking spot.
I really thought that was Brandon.
Dude.
I'm sorry.
That's
he was so
bus
far away.
Come?
Yeah, that's he's probably getting off.
Right,
no,
we're,
I don't know.
We're
don't
posted know. Right up in front of the bus.
God damn.
That may or may not have been Brandon.
That was not Brandon. Brandon wouldn't have just walked away like that.
Steven, thanks for being on the show.
Yep.
And Brandon, the mysterious stranger.
Too bad.
It's a fucking podcast,
yeah, exactly.
Dude.
Chris. Hey, what's up, guys?
Daniel.
Welcome.
And Charles.
Hello.
There they are. That can be confirmed with forensic audio evidence. You can take those samples, match them against the Jimmy Time podcast. It will be confirmed that they have impregnated women via their sound. Anyway, there's DNA tests for this now. People are getting popped on Maury left, right, and center for audio tests.
Bleeding bloody eardrums.
So, Jimmy Time Podcast, now this is a brain trust, what I have here, and what I'm going to do with this brain trust that I've assembled, called the Jimmy Time Podcast, throw out some topics, see how they roll with it. I was looking at Google News, and, like, there's equal billing with Heidi Klum. Okay, so Heidi Klum was in Hawaii, and, like, her baby dropped momentarily, and then she picked it up, and it was safe. That was it. That had equal billing on Google News to Kim Jong-un threatens nuclear destruction.
That was...
So what do you think about, like, news these days? How, like, it's very hard to navigate and know what the hell's going on. What's important to...
I think it's divided between the have and have-nots, I guess. Idiots and
I don't know, not so idiot.
Very well put.
That's the best way. That's the best way. It's just strange. This is really strange.
Where do you get your news stories?
News stories? Well, yeah. Like, I usually go on MSN, and then I also watch like Fox News and. And,
so you feel like you get both sides if you're listening to Democrat
or Republican.
Yeah, pretty
much. So it's like, okay, I'll check this out and check this out. So then you do see the differences. Even just stupid little, like, plush stories. You know what I mean? It's like, it's mostly those. And then occasionally, a very, very important, just like you put the North Korean Kim Jong-un.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's really, honestly, I haven't heard much talk about that.
Yeah.
To be honest,
has anyone ever said, like, if you listen to MSNBC and Fox News, you're getting, like, the two, like, corporate propaganda angles. You know, some people say that there's this whole shadow government that the CIA controls with ancient aliens, you know?
Yeah.
Charles, I want your input. Ancient aliens.
Ancient aliens? I like how I went from top news to ancient aliens.
No, but where do you get your news sources from? What do you trust?
I usually don't watch the TV news.
Okay.
I watch fake news like The Daily Show a lot, so I don't think that really counts. But I still have AOL.com, and they're linked with Huffington Post.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a lot of variety. I probably on one day read the really serious political news, and then after that, celebrity news. So they're usually put together.
So you feel like Huffington Post gives you a little bit of titillation with, ooh, who's Selena Gomez with?
Pretty much.
Hey, this is what Obama's up to. Drone
yeah.
murder. So, German, you're dabbling in... stand-up comedy.
I am.
What's going on? How many shows have you done? Are you being active since we...
I've done two only.
Okay.
Right? But I've always wanted to do it ever since I was little. Right now, I just wanted to get my foot in the door to see if I did like it. And
mm-hmm.
I love it. I spend most of my time writing. What I wanted to do, but I realized it was really hard, that I want to do a different set every stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done two different ones. I'm working on a third one,
mm-hmm.
so I can go out and do another one. And yeah, like I try to be as.
Are you trying to like put the jokes together into a superset?
Yeah. Well, no,
like,
no, not really.
Just
take
the ones that work and then go. Hey.
Well, because
I'm honing a craft now. Do you want to do something with stand up?
Yeah. That's what I want to do. Like,
mm-hmm.
as if I could. Be something, that's what I would want to do. But I'm still going to school. Right now, I'm trying to make that more of a priority. I feel like I can do stand-up maybe after that.
Mm-hmm.
Just so I have something to fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. You gotta take it serious. Like, for me, I was trying to, like, do it, like, three nights a week, you
yeah.
know? It's
yeah.
Otherwise, I don't know. I think you gotta get up there, man.
Yeah. Well, how's it been for you? How
are you? Oh, it's fun, man. I love it. Because I did improv before. Like, I did... UCB and stuff,
oh.
and but anyway, this is my podcast. I have a brain trust here, and that is what we're using. Now, we met at, I noticed about your stand-up, we met at, what was that place called?
The Pig and Whistle.
The Pig and Whistle,
yeah.
That's right. And you had a lot of gay jokes. What's going on there?
Oh, yeah. if you haven't...
do you have something in
Yeah, something being suppressed. Huh?
My
Uncle Freud needs to pay a visit.
I don't know. It's just a lot of people think I'm gay. Like,
mm-hmm.
I get that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think more than...
Well, you made like a couple jokes about like, you know... Up the butt was a punchline.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That was
yeah.
you getting it. So,
yeah.
I maybe that's how people came to the conclusion.
And also, like, because in my head it's hilarious. Like,
right.
I think about it and, like, oh, it'd be a funny. I don't really see it as, like, a homosexual joke. I see it just more as it's funny someone taking something out of their ass or
yeah.
putting it in their ass. It's just a funny image in my head.
Yeah, it's not just a gateway.
No.
Makes me giggle, then it'll make me tickle.
Yeah, but I've never had a cucumber in my ass. It's all a joke.
Okay.
As far as we know. Right?
Yeah, never know.
Did the hot dog ever break off and you have to retrieve it with tweezers?
Put a string in with a needle and try to...
Not that I've ever done that. I would consult a physician.
It has to like pierce through the hot dog.
He's a MacGyver when it comes to getting stuff out of cavities.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that's how I would do it. I think
I would call like Loveline and just make sure that that's the right way to do
Drew,
it.
Dr. Drew, how did I get this out of my ass?
Look, I got a hot dog up my ass. Should I put a needle on a string and poke it up my colon?
You have to make it into a hook. That's how you pull it out.
That's how you pull the hook that catches on your intestines. You're crazy. You also made a couple. I had my friend Connor there, Connor King, uh-huh. kid I go doing mics with. You know, I can say it. He's a handsome young lad. You were making a couple, you know, I'm a straight guy, I'm comfortable saying that. You were making a couple passes at him as well.
Oh, yeah.
Joking passes, but then combined with the evidence we see as your stand-up set.
Yeah.
Seemed like a guy. I don't want to blow up your spot here. Yeah, sure. One day after college, you'll do stand-up more and then come out. Okay, so anyway. Here's another topic for the brain trust. And now it's free-flowing. Anyone can chime in whenever they want, you know. I just wanted to grill him about that. I don't want to bust his balls about me.
He's a little too interested in that, if you ask me.
No, we can move on. I collected a series of pieces of evidence in my head and I wanted to...
He's making connections that aren't there.
The other thing I want to say real quick is you do have a girlfriend. And during my set, I was making some Hitler joke. She had her mouth over her hand over her mouth the whole time like... Oh my God!
It's because she loves Hitler. So
you obviously offended.
She's not
her.
Offended by
that. Yeah. And then afterward, you gave me a Zika. What was with that? No, she just seemed very, very horrified by the
so, presented. Oh no, the SS is coming back.
She's been hanging out with us for a while. We've said some.
Yeah, we've said some like, pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah,
I just remember body language was. Oh, I feel so bad for this person saying all these incredibly hateful things. Why is he doing this?
Because he looks so endearing. I think. Like, oh,
I'm all clean cut, and then I'm like, what about ethnic cleansing? It gets weird real fast.
I liked your set a lot.
Thanks, man.
Right? Like, I instantly... That's why, like, I kind of, like, gravitated towards you. Or attracted to you. I don't know.
Whoa, more
evidence. There you go. I'm not going to the whole time. Because I could tell yours is a lot more... how I enjoy comedy. It's a lot more structured.
Mm-hmm.
Instantly, you stood out from everyone else in there. But even though there wasn't that many, like... it was a lot of... You know, musicians and whatever, but out of the comedians, you stood out a lot.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I liked your set too. It was really interesting. I think your set was so like personal, and like I could really feel your writing process. Where, you had like these bits prepared. Where do you get your material?
Just from like I'll be at work or I'll be at home. Or I'll just be out, and it's really personal. Like, if I, think of something, first I have to, think, okay, well, other people get offended. That's only if I'm going to say it out in public.
Listen, man, who cares if people get offended? You put a certain vibe out, and then if people like it, then they're there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I'm feeling lately. Like, I've been getting really into looking at my ratings recently. I'm like, oh, it went up, down, and then I had a great guest. I had Bobby Slayton on. He was like, and then, you know, not a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, listened. I listened to that one. That was really good.
But it was weird. It was like, I don't know. I get so into the ratings, and I think, oh, man, maybe I should have censored myself there. I was, like, talking too crazy there.
Yeah.
And I don't really mean anything I'm saying. I'm just, like, playing with ideas. But anyway, I just, what do you think about, like, do you catch your ratings? We were talking earlier.
I think at first I was at least like, oh, I want a lot of people to listen. I want to like, I want to be really popular. Mm. But then after like, it's hard to like, not keeping it fresh, but, keeping it consistent. I'm always like, oh, I could have done this better. I'm very self-criticizing.
Yeah, but I think you gotta just like pick out the best jokes and then put them together in a wad of craziness and then throw it at people. Like, if you got 5 minutes, you want to kick people in the dick.
Yeah,
bro. You want to get up there and go, this is some shit. You know what I mean?
Just, yeah.
You gotta get go after it. But yeah, it's cool, man. You're still young. You got the time, but you know when you're gonna do that, go crazy.
Cool.
What do you guys think? Go on.
No, no, I'm just saying that's all we need is Herman to throw his wad at people.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Then you need the lawsuit and litigation. Yeah. And then there's like, depending on who gets hit by the wad, it's like that's how many restraining orders. It's like it's very hard to stay 100 feet away from like 30 people as you're driving through a city. You know, like how are they going to enforce that?
But having like, because lately I was even thinking about this today. Do you ever get worried about who you're going to make a joke about? Maybe they'll get offended. Maybe they'll retaliate, some sort of lawsuit or something.
Yeah, what's funny is I do a lot of, like we were saying, like Hitler material and stuff. And sometimes I'll say a joke and I'll realize it'll like hit the crowd like, oh my God, he's going to start a Klan rally now. And then now I'm like, I can't just leave it at that and expect people will know I'm joking.
Yeah.
Now I feel more like, okay, if I say a crazy racist joke, then I have to say, then like now I just say, you know, after I have this Hitler thing where then I go, oh, and then in the 1936 Olympics, Hitler showed off his master race in the Olympics, and then they got decimated by black guys from America. So, you know what I mean? Then you have to, like, throw it all the way the other way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think if you're smart about it, you can tightrope and make
it.
Yeah,
see, and
then, you know what I'm saying?
It shows that you format it like that. It's like, you see it, like, I love comedy, like, I'm constantly just trying to look at new comedians, right? What I wanted to do was just go on Wikipedia, look up every single comedian in the United States, watch a video of it, and then move on to like Australia and just to compare and contrast, because that's the kind of weird things that I like to do.
Yeah, I would go on binges of just like listening to everything Eddie Izzard ever did and just listen to that in like a weekend. I don't know if you know who that guy is, or then Mitch Hedberg, like.
Yeah, oh,
just,
yeah. Mitch is good.
Just study people, you know.
Yeah.
Who are some of your favorites?
I like a lot Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good.
He's a champion right now.
Yeah, I think he's been a really big influence.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then Dave Chappelle. Mm-hmm. Dave Chappelle. Conan O'Brien. Mm-hmm. Conan O'Brien. Craig Ferguson. Craig mm-hmm. Ferguson. I think those mainly. I like David Spade too. Some of his old stuff.
All right, Jimmy Time, who do you guys like? And why?
When it comes to comedians?
Yeah.
I don't really follow comedians. I only watch the ones that are ever talked about. Like, of course, Dave Chappelle. Conan O'Brien a little bit. George Lopez, you know what? I think he's okay. But not, like, crazy, crazy funny or whatever.
He's just Mexican.
He's just Mexican. So, he just says stuff that I recognize.
You relate
so I laugh
to.
At it.
Yeah.
That's what it is with right. When it comes to like Mexican or you know Hispanic comedians. You just relate to it, so it's funny.
Yeah, I hear
it's
you.
That kind of thing.
Do you find a difference between East Coast and like West Coast comedians? You know, because I'm from the East Coast. I don't know. You guys are all from here. You guys are all from California. On the East Coast, like. You know, things are like, people are really aggressive, you know, and like want to point out other people's flaws and like go crazy.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, they like deal with hecklers. Like, you see Bill Burr just tearing people apart, like hecklers like that and stuff. Do you, and then when I came here, it's just like a harder, people just, you know, you can get yelled at for like real specific stuff about yourself all the time, you know, and so you kind of like keep on your toes. Just wondering for you, like, do you notice a difference between East Coast and West Coast comics?
I picked it up. Yeah, I think there's a big difference. I some of the ones that we've named, and I also watch, for example, I feel like the epitome of angry Eastern Coast comedy is probably Lewis Black. I feel like that. I just watch him, and I'm kind of like, oh, that's pretty funny. But I don't really relate to it in the sense where, like, I don't know those experience or anything, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like the comedians are over on this coast are a little more laid back,
mm-hmm.
a little more like go with the flow kind of thing.
Just trying to make everyone have a good
time. You guys
time.
Are changing the world. The ones over here are just destroying it.
Not trying to publicly humiliate the drunk idiot in the front. Oh, so my mom is also going to be at the end of this episode. I had a little. My mom visited from the East Coast. I have a tattoo here. We got matching. Tattoos. I'm dragging. I got one on my bicep. She's got one on her forehead. forearm. We got that in an arcade. We won it via shuffleboard tickets. Okay. So,
shuffleboard master.
Yeah. Or what's it? Not shuffle. Is it shuffleboard or the rolly
no,
ball with the
ski ball?
Ski ball.
Oh. Yeah, shuffleboard's what you do on cruises.
That's true. Yeah, it's just my mom's old. So I assume you're playing shuffleboard. So she wanted to, I don't know, because she's like in for the time, she wanted to like have a whole photo album, like everywhere we went, it would be like, okay, now smile in front of this, okay, now smile in front of that, and you know, I was getting a little, also my mom like, I don't know, I'm 27 right now, I don't have anyone in my life telling me what to do about anything. And all of a sudden, I flew my mom in, and she wanted to tell me what to do about everything. And then we were doing this photo album, right? So every time, like, we went to Santa Barbara, we took pictures or whatever. But everywhere we went, she just kept, like giving me unsolicited advice over and over again. And I started going crazy. And then, like, in my head, like, the picture, or you see my face, the pictures, at first I'm smiling, and then I'm getting more and more aggravated while I'm there. I'm like, this is the 50th picture. Can we enjoy anything, or are we going to be taking pictures the whole time? But anyway, what do you guys think? You guys, you're all families here, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
What's going on? You guys are young guys. Overbearing parents? What's going on?
No, I actually grew up in foster care.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I got emancipated at 16. Right. Pretty much started living. I was living with my brother, and so he ended up doing his thing. I kept on with school, and right now I'm just working. I do surveys at the mall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't consider it a real job at all. It's just pretty much just standing around asking people about groceries.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like the interaction with people. That's where actually I get a lot of material, because like it's just people. Even today, like there was this lady, and I was gonna write about it. She was holding her child, like looked like a brand new baby, brand new off the store. And she was holding it like a football almost, and she was just whatever. Right, while her child was like dangling, kind of just lifeless from.
Was it Heidi Klum?
Right? She saved that baby in a line. New story, yeah. Just as important. Yeah.
And it was just—I told my coworker, like, dude, look at this lady, and she's just careless, holding an infant, just like a football.
I was a production assistant, and I worked on this P. Diddy show, like making the band, you know, as a production assistant, whatever. And there was one part, we had a mall signing with the band that Diddy made, right?
Uh-huh.
And, okay, it was all African-Americans showed up to this thing.
Yeah.
And one lady was holding her baby like
scared.
A football, like the size, trying to get an autograph. And she was talking to her friend. I just lost my mind. I just grabbed his hand. He's so cute from that band. Diddy loved him. All the while, the baby's just dangling. The baby was dangling while she assaulted the member. Like, stay at home. Feed that baby. What are you doing out? And grabbing some guy's head from MTV. Crazy.
He wanted to touch his hair, I guess. I don't know. What's wrong with people? They're just...
I got him.
There's no self-control.
Yeah. He's going to turn and go, ow, thanks for pulling lock out of my hair. I'm in love with you. Would you like me to father your child now? I will be that man.
How's that
you
ever
grab
worked?
My head. How long have you guys been doing Jimmy Time? Tell me about the Jimmy Time podcast.
Let's see, what did we start in, like, September of last year?
Yeah,
September
pretty much.
2012. One of us, who was it, German or Danny that had the idea?
Danny came up
right?
With me.
Yeah.
Oh, it came up to me, and he was like, dude, like, there's these guys, I've been listening to Bridgetown podcast.
Yeah.
And, like, they're really funny, he's like, I think we could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I had recording equipment, because I used to be in a bunch of different bands, and I used to record. And so I was like, yeah, dude, let's do it, what's the worst that can happen? We did it. We liked it a lot.
Yeah.
And we just kept doing it.
And how do you guys promote it?
Just through YouTube. Like, we don't
YouTube.
We
have a YouTube channel? Hey,
yeah.
That's how people do it these days. That's how you do
well,
it.
Well, only because we're can't afford any memberships to any sort of podcast
hosting site.
Yeah.
Oh, aren't you guys on SoundCloud?
Oh, yes, yeah, we are on SoundCloud. Yeah.
That's free, isn't it? I hope.
Yeah, it's free, but we're doing better when we're on Podbean, but...
Oh, yeah?
We were on iTunes for a while, too.
iTunes for a while, yes. Yeah. But,
Kicked off iTunes. You guys are renegade podcast pirate ship.
There we go. Yeah.
This is underground railroad
first underground
of podcasting.
Sounds like a band.
Love you, God.
So if you guys are even listening to this, this is like a speakeasy. The cops are going to shut us down because we're not a part of the aristocracy at Podbean.
Yeah.
Actually, that's my hosting site. This is Highway Diary. We have to remember.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't done Jimmy Dime yet. Okay. Anything you guys want to throw out your Twitter handles?
I saw this crazy movie yesterday. I had never seen it. Elizabeth Broderick.
That's a long Twitter handle, man.
I don't know.
Like Twitters to throw out?
Just the YouTube.
We only have YouTube.
Okay, yeah. So
I wasn't. I thought that was like some sort of slang.
Facebook
slang. Yeah.
If you want this brain trust in your life, get in the Jimmy Time podcast. Search for that on YouTube and get hooked up to these fellas. Laying it, keeping it real, laying low. We don't need Podbean. Actually, Mike. check it out. I got some stand-up shows coming up Thursday, April 25th, 7:30 at Flappers, Yoohoo Room, and also May 14th, 7:30, Flappers, Yoohoo Room. Go to ericholderbach.com and tell a friend about Highway Diaries. Tell them what you like about it. Write me a love note on Facebook. I'll read it. Thanks to Jimmy Time Podcast.
Thank you for having us.
No problem.
Goodbye.
Highway Diaries, this is the Eagle. What's going on? Cough, fucking caw. Anyway, that's my handle. I'm sitting here with Calder Hallbrook.
Hello.
I know this guy from Monkey Butler. We were on the barrel together before I went into retirement for stand-up. You've stayed on the barrel. Tell me about it. What's going on? So, how's the new blood? How's the crowd dynamic, you know?
Well, it's going fairly well. We just did a musical performance just this past Friday.
I was seeing about that on Facebook.
Yeah, that went awfully well, I think. There's been some turnover, and I think the new parts are integrating fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Who's the new people on the team?
The newest people that have come in, you know, Timmy Morgan, I think, maybe. Or maybe you don't.
No, I don't know Tim Morgan.
He was in Level 3 for a good while, and I was always very admiring of him and wondering why he wasn't with us. Mm-hmm. And that was true for some of the other people that have come in.
Hey, check out a Monkey Butler show, The Barrel. Timmy Morgan, blowing it up. He rose through the ranks of this school real fast, and now he's on The Barrel.
Getting it done.
Yeah.
He's there. We have a Brittany Joyner, so that gives us now two ladies on the team.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah, normally it's just all dudes and one girl. Too much for her to handle.
Yeah, so it's been very cool. It's been neat. Cool. I've now branched out a little bit myself, so I'm on a different improv team as well. Mm-hmm. So Monkey Butler is still near and dear to my heart, but also doing the broader range of things.
Well, cool. what's your other team, man?
I'm now on a team called Mrs. Belvedere.
Miss Belvedere? Where do they perform at? Where can people catch a Miss Belvedere show?
Wherever they can get booked. The next place that we're at, I think, is we're doing a show some day of the week at I.O., I think. We were at I.O. just a few days ago, but you just sort of have to look around because we could be any place.
Yeah. Miss Belvedere is underground shit, okay? You want to see the cutting of edge. Like, this is a rough group, but then it's like these talents as they go through are going to get sculpted into megastars. But, you know.
Absolutely.
Now you're on the underground streets.
Hopefully, we'll perform literally underground someday.
Do you have a
really
Facebook
neat.
Page so people can
If you just look up Mrs. Belvedere on Facebook, and then there's also Twitter and all the regular online.
There are channels where you can hear whispers of where Miss Belvedere is going to be performing.
If you can find like a barber or a shoe shine or something like that, you ask them what the word on the street is, they'll probably tip you off to us.
Yeah, flick them a quarter and do it with style and do it with aggression so he knows you're looking for a Miss Belvedere show.
The newsies know all about us.
Because they're like, look, most people might seem like, what the fuck are you talking about? I haven't heard of that group. But it's only because they know they want to keep them a secret. They want to keep them down. They don't want everyone. It's like, you know, indie bands, before they blow up, everyone's like, oh, you too? Yeah, I knew them when they were U1. All right? Let me tell you something. They played this bar. Three people showed up. I stayed for, I was at every show, you know.
Do you think they ever identified as U1?
I
would like to think so.
They didn't earn the two yet. Until Bono chose his vocal range between A and a F overture, which is actually, they thought was physically impossible until
they've
Bono.
Achieved almost everything there is to achieve in the recording industry. What's it going to take to get them to U3?
World peace. Bono's been to a lot of like press conferences where he's drank like three mineral waters that were off brand, you know, in order to raise awareness for world peace. He's out there. He's doing stuff. He's on panel meetings. The press are showing up. They're giving him photographs and good press, you know. It's a grind.
Sure, it absolutely is.
The struggle against bigotry and ignorance.
Yeah, I feel for those guys.
He's changed a lot of hearts and minds. And he's the greatest rock and roll musician ever.
Of all time. I think that anybody would agree with that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe there's a little... It's crowded at the top, right? But he's pretty good. And so he does it all. Just ask him. Perfect ego is what it takes.
Oh, man. I wish I had that.
Speaking of perfect ego, I was talking about Kim Jong-il earlier. I've been given down this conspiracy theory that I think that he's paid off by the owners of the Federal Reserve to be a scare person so that they send North Korea $1 billion a year and they go, hey, I'm just going to give it to Kim Jong-un, and he takes $990 million off the top and has the most lavish lifestyle ever, gives nothing to the people, but his only job is to go on television and go, we're doing nuclear weapons! You should... Ah! I'm scary!
It was a pretty rough press conference.
And then, and then U2's there, and he shows up to the press conference, lots of press, and it's like... Oh. And then they also said Dennis Rodman over at this...
There was a magazine, I think it's like Vice, or like they sent Rodman over there... for whatever purpose, I guess, like they really like basketball in the Kim family, and that was the most bizarre thing to see them just chatting courtside at some game. It seems like, not that there's no reason for concern, but it does seem like, I was saying, like, why is everybody freaking out? Well, sometimes I wonder.
Yeah. Because sometimes, you know, Kim Jong-il and Kim Jong-un, they hold press conferences and we're like, we're going to launch a rocket. And then, like, someone's boot explodes and they're like, that was the demonstration.
Yeah, they're not number one in rocketry, I think. Yeah. Anybody would agree by that.
They're number one in getting press conferences together so that the people who own the government, who just are constant, like, war monkeys, who just are, like, lords of chaos, who want to just keep, you know, having... you know, saber rattling in the Middle East so that they can control the oil, confusing the people with stuff so that they can control the money supply. Those people are chaos monkeys and they all want endless war. And so in order to scare their own people into agreeing with war and saying, oh yeah, we need to have all these, by just having a guy on television with a weird haircut go, bah, I'm going to shoot nuclear weapons.
Hey, speaking of indie rock, Scare Monkeys.
The Scare Monkeys.
Catch them.
Yeah. They know all about, all their lyrics are all about this.
It's really, like, there's no end to the fascination to me in North Korea, because, like, when they're not all belligerent, like, they're still really fascinating things. I had read a thing, Kim Jong-un had studied abroad, like, when he was a little bit younger, still a very young guy, but that, like, just recently I was reading a thing, like, apparently he was in a production of Grease. when he was in school?
Yeah. Well, his dad loves theater and showmanship. And I think that's the thing. They just love theater. They love being showy. And it's like, you know, that's their job, too, is being showy and get your hair greased up and go on TV and go, rah!
It's always a military parade or something mm-hmm. like that with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy. Do you ever read this thing? I've known other people that are really into North Korea, I don't know what you call it, esoterica or something like that.
What's that?
But, well, there was this particular thing about, not too many North Koreans drive, you know, it's not an especially well-to-do country
right.
for the people, the elites drive around, and there are tourists from China that drive around, but most people don't have cars, so there are a few cars on the road. But they have intersections. I guess they don't have traffic lights. Electricity is a problem for them.
Mm-hmm.
So what they have is sort of if a traffic light goes out in America, they'll send a cop out there to direct it around. But they basically have that all the time, so that they'll have these beautiful North Korean women in these fancy uniforms that are doing these choreographed moves to signal which car should go first. But there are no cars coming. They're just sort of doing it, and then when the next person comes to take their shift, to handle that intersection, they do this sort of Buckingham Palace thing where the new person comes in, I'm taking over. They're doing this little dance, and the other person says, "All right, I'm leaving."
Yeah,
and they do this thing.
So they have changing of the guards for the
just at intersections.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This whole economy is based on. So Kim Jong Un goes, when I get to a corner, I want a pretty woman pointing my way. And so they're like, yes, Mr. Un. And so they, you know, take a little bit of his money and that he gets from these people, and he puts it towards that. I wonder if Kim Jong-un just drove really fast and goes, watch this, I could do anything in my own place, and just runs over three in a row of the crossing guards, and they would still be doing the motions as they're being run over because they're that dedicated.
I would be very surprised if he knew how to drive a car.
Exactly. So he's like, I could do anything. Just takes them all out.
I remember, I think it was a story at the Beijing Olympics, or maybe it was London. I just remember that they had hired people to pose as fans of North Korea at events at the Olympics.
Really?
I think that was the recent one. I don't remember for sure. I think it was the London Olympics, but it might have been from before.
Wow, so they just shipped in people to just... Was it their own people, Iranians?
I think it might even have been some from another Asian nation. I don't remember.
Whoa.
But I thought that was man, that is...
They didn't have any citizens that weren't malnourished and fucked up looking.
It's pretty insecure, right?
So they're like, I know, get me beautiful people. I guess they just got them from South Korea. You know, they're Koreans, they look the same, I guess.
Maybe.
Maybe. It's a different race, though.
the only people in the world that, still at all stand with North Korea are the Chinese, for whatever reason. I don't know why that is.
Well, I guess they're both kind of a communist thing, you know, going on.
If you call what China does communism, I guess.
Yeah? Yeah, what do you think? What do you think the secret treaties are between China and North Korea?
God, I don't know. It's difficult to say what North Korea contributes to that relationship.
They just give them cartons of cigarettes.
I guess it's just maybe they're a distraction. Nobody's going to be thinking about what China's doing.
They just are all right, we'll let you sit in the meeting and talk crazy. And then he feels important. They, you know, take care of him and they ship him back. And he's like, China loves me. Everyone loves me. I am God.
That's got to be a spot-on Kim Jong-un.
And then peasants can't muster an applause because they're so sick.
Oh, yeah, that is a difficult spot.
It's just human nature. It's like, you know, if you were put in his position, if you, you know, do you think that you would be ultimately corrupted if you're like, hey, here's your whole country, here's $1 billion, spread that amongst your people, however you see fit, or whatever, or steal it all and live a crazy lifestyle? What would you do?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think that I'd be a better steward of control in North Korea. But when you think about it, he's a young, inexperienced guy, you know, and whether he's bending a lot to the influence of people around him or not, it's not a good situation to do the right thing. You know, when you have absolute power like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I,
it's
I,
creepy. And his whole life has been, like, all this, like, his meals, I'm sure, this kid's meals have just been endless pageantry of bringing in the eggs, bringing in the... So, like, he's... No one's ever, like, said, hey, fuck you, Kim Jong-un, to his fat face. No one's ever said that. He doesn't know that's possible. So it's like the world he lives in is so distorted.
Yeah, I would love it if there could be some kind of objective, like unbiased, unvarnished, like psychological profile on him.
Yeah.
Because that would just be fascinating to know, like how his mind operates based on how it's been shaped over the years.
And I think the same thing is probably true for the Queen of England. Look at that person. She hasn't worked a day in her fucking life. Everything's been pageantry.
Well, she did work on set that day when they shot the James Bond thing for the Olympics, I bet.
What?
You never saw that?
She spent 20 minutes standing in front of a teleprompter? Whoa. She is... Wow. What a workhorse.
Hey, more
fuck
work.
The Queen of England.
It's more work than I put in a lot of days.
Well, you're an artist. You have to restore your juju reserves, you know?
Oh, man.
You need your beauty rest for your creativity.
You're right.
It's your bohemian lifestyle. But I think it's just human nature, you know? Another thing I'm fascinated with is there's this tribe in the Philippines, and they're like a warrior tribe, and all the men are like really strict warriors. I gotta turn on the car because it's really hot in here. Getting the AC going.
We're obviously hitting some really hot subjects.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah, here we... It's just... Pedophilia is where this is going. But the soldiers, they've convinced the young boys, like 10, hey, if you drink the loads, you know, the jizz of the older men soldiers, you'll get our vitality, you know? And this culture has been around for thousands of years, and this has been their culture. And, you know, Western doctors would go, it's a cycle of abuse. They were sexually molested on the field of battle. They're like, yes, well, we look for this rhinoceros to kill. Oh, we killed that other tribe. And now we're just on the hike. Suck my dick. You know, and that's how it's been going. That is probably not at all what a Filipino sounds like. That was a bad accent for a Filipino. But my point is, they have just going, you know, and it's like, oh, it's like one of the little kids is like, oh, this hike is just so hard. I'm just really tired. You need like 5 of my loads. Trust me. It's like they've just gone crazy, you know? Their culture supports this just, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think Manny Pacquiao must be lucky that he got into the, by comparison, easier world of pro boxing.
What if that's a secret and he drank like, you know, thousands of loads and that's what makes him vital, you know?
Oh, boy.
New study. Are they testing for cum shots in the, like, when they test for...
I find it hard. I don't know what test would be able to uncover the presence of that.
They're like, dude, you have bad indigestion. Have you been drinking, like, gallons of cum for your whole...
Probably the only way to get that, would
for
be...
For your formative years.
A polygraph test would probably be the way of getting that.
Yeah.
Polygraphs are interesting because, like, everybody thinks, like, that's something that like, actually, like, comes at the truth of things,
mm-hmm.
But it's, the courts won't accept it, which makes a lot of sense when you think about the fact that really a polygraph depends upon you not being comfortable with telling a lie, because
right.
That's what it picks up.
Right, so if you're just a total sociopath and you feel nothing when you lie, they don't measure your heart, they can't measure your sweat, you know?
Your soul.
Your clammy palms. Yeah.
There's some good liars out there, you know, as you I'm sure, have found in your...
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know... There's this funny joke that this guy, I like, Kenny Hotz, he made this joke where he's like, you know, if Napoleon was born in England, he would have been, like, a busboy, but... Because he was born in France, you know, he became the best person ever. It shows how stupid the French are, you know. It's just interesting. It's like, depending on where you're born, what year you're born, what time you're born, you know, depends your fate so much.
Who was that guy who, the author, who did, like, Outliers and, like, he did all these, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I saw him on The Daily Show once.
His name escapes me for the moment, but he was, like, he had one of his books talked about, like, how the exact time and place that a person came out of, like meant so much for what they became. And it seems to me that one of the examples was Bill Gates or somebody like that who just so happened to go to a, like one school
right.
that happened to have like a computer and all this stuff. And if that had never been, then, you know...
And he got the exact right training to develop the next level of this computer technology, you know?
Yeah, and you think to yourself, like, I often see somebody who is in lower circumstances than I am, and I think to myself, well, what really separates me from them? As much as I think about somebody who's doing better than I am and says, what keeps me from being them? I say to myself, of someone who looks like they're in a rough spot, like, there, but for the grace of God, go I, because... Like, had I not been granted, like, a fantastic start in life, that could easily have been me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just as much as, like, I could be, like, already a billionaire if I were lucky enough that I bumped into somebody when I was 10 years old or
yeah.
I happened to go to this school or something like that. It's scary what circumstance means to you.
And I think, like, something like the lottery really personifies that, where it's like you just are any idiot and you just one day go, I'll try to win $370 million with $1. And the people that do actually do that, it's like they all go bankrupt and they go crazy, you know?
Yeah, the people who win the lottery seem to have a bad track record. I was one of the guys who recently won, like, one of the really big jackpots of a multi-state lottery. It was interesting because at first it was sort of a feel-good story because he was the operator of a bodega, which I don't really... That's like a convenience store or something?
Yeah.
You would know better than I would. You're from back east.
Yeah, but no one knows. It's just a corner store with liquor and, you know, chips and, you know, that kind of stuff.
But it's... Yeah.
And an ATM.
It's just a different word, I guess. But
yeah.
So he, like, ran a bodega in New York or New Jersey or someplace. And so at first it's like a small-time businessman makes good, and then like one of the things that was interesting to me is that one of the first things he had to do with his winnings was pay off like a five-figure debt to like alimony.
Yeah, and child support, and then all those people start calling. All right, so he just is down, you know, 20 grand out of a couple million. So then what happens?
I don't know for a guy like that. I don't know how things go. Like, do you suddenly start making smart decisions?
Yeah.
Because you've got that money. I think you just make the same decisions, like, with bigger stakes, maybe.
Yeah, and it used to be that you would take that money and go right to someplace like Morgan Stanley or Goldman Sachs and go, I'm an idiot. You seem like a smart person. How about you invest this money for me? But then you have all these, like, corruptions. Things, scandals coming out of Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley where they're just trying to fuck their own customers to get themselves money. And so the stock market is very volatile. You could lose it all if, you know, they invest in something that you didn't even know about. And then they call you up and go, all your money's gone. You know, it's even if you do all that stuff that society tells you is the right thing to do, you could get totally fucked. You could get made off.
Here's like my, here would be like a pretty... secure. Well, I don't know. There's some risk involved in it, but here would be like a good diversified portfolio
if
that you could
consider.
If you
buy a casino boat.
You buy a casino boat. Well, you know, then you have to like scrape barnacles and plug holes and things. Who wants that? I say...
Plug in lots of holes if you owned a fucking carnival boat. Let me tell you something.
I say, here's what you do. You take like a third of your money.
Yeah.
You put that in coffee cans in the ground in the yard. You take another third, you put that under the mattress, and then you put the remainder...
You're diversifying.
Yeah, exactly.
Your portfolio.
The third portion goes into your sock.
Oh, okay.
That way, you know, the money doesn't appreciate in any of these places, but it doesn't diminish either.
Well, then what happens when you start, like, wanting to buy a house or get a car or, you know, get some food for the day? You just slowly take this cash out 100 by 100 and it'll live, you know, you'll be able to sustain on it?
Yeah, I mean, provided you're starting with a good amount of capital, there's not really any need to put the money at risk. So,
right.
The real downfall here is that, you know, when you have lumps of money under your mattress, then you could have back problems or... you know, that same thing could kind of happen if you have the money in your sock.
Well, you know, if anyone heard that there's a house with very little security and an idiot sleeping on bricks and bricks and bricks of hundreds of millions of dollars, someone might try to, I don't know, murder you and take all that money. It seems like, you know.
Well, there's risk involved in any investment strategy.
I see. Yeah.
You know.
Beats the stock market sure. where all of a sudden your broker calls you, oh, sorry, I stole all the money, and by the way, I have a golden parachute in the Caribbean. Bye.
You know who's really terrible at investing is athletes. Athletes and, like,
yeah.
people in entertainment, I think, perhaps, too, but a lot of athletes, because I had watched this awfully interesting special that talked about how they spend money and what they tend to put their money in. And, you know, you have a lot of your, you know, the same things as lottery winners. Like, your buddy says he's got a great plan for something. Or, like, and they'll, you say, like, you have an athlete who is in his prime earning years for maybe, like, 5 years or 10
right,
years. And
yeah.
he spends, like, he's going to make that much every year the rest of his life. And they tend to invest in things that are really cool, like a club, instead of something that's kind of boring, like, I don't know, like an index fund or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or, you know.
And they're like, you know what, I like Cavassier and bitches. And then they think, hey, my retirement plan is I just own a club, people come in, spend money, and I get my dick sucked. That's the plan. That's my retirement plan.
There's lots of growth in that.
But then when you're not actually, like, managing the club, and it's just about, you know, a paper castle that you've built, you have to start paying people to come to your club, like Kim Jong-un pays people to go to the Olympics.
I thought
you were
going to say you pay Kim Jong-un to come.
Well, you got to actually know how to manage a club and stuff, which there's a lot of promotion involved. Or you got to have a Twitter handle. And if you've been taking concussive blows in the NFL for five, you know, prime years, your accounting skills might not be up to snuff. So
yeah, you know, that's correct.
You gotta have people running shit for you. Or you just try to keep up with all your other, you know, people and be like, yeah, I bought like 5 Phantom Rolls Royces today. Because that's what I do. My plan, my retirement plan is I live in them and I sell them off, but I get bitches in them to suck my dick.
See, again,
retirement.
I think that's where you, again, need to diversify. You want to get, like, a couple of Rolls Royces, like a couple of Bugattis, maybe
yeah.
a couple of Ferraris.
Yeah, and put the cash in the trunk. Drive
yeah.
around and have a good time.
Yeah.
And then when one car runs out of money, and, you know, then you just sell it and then go to the next car of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
just, you know, spend your days on the road.
See, you and I, if we could only just get that startup money, because we've got the plans.
Where's all my $300 million?
Do you ever, have you ever, like, actually bought, like, lottery tickets or things like that?
I have, yeah, a couple times.
Do you, like, what's your reasoning behind that?
Well, just as a goof, you know, you want some action, you want to test it, you want to go, let me look up these numbers the next day and see if my lifestyle is going to be pimp as fuck.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
I most of the time I can laugh at the people who habitually buy lottery tickets.
Yeah, it's not like a once a week thing. I've done it like maybe I, you know, 20 times or something.
Yeah, when it gets to be like so big that everyone around you is actually talking about it, then it becomes difficult to resist.
Yeah,
I had this teacher in. I was in like the lowest math classes all through school. And in college, just to get to the math class that actually counted for my general ed requirement, I think I had to take like 2 or 3 different classes to build up to that bottom rung math class.
Wow.
Yeah, so
you started at a deficit in classes as well. You were learning exactly how fucked you were in those classes.
Yeah, I was in like the burnout math class. But like it was like some of it was really awfully interesting because we studied a little bit of statistics and we studied about like election processes and somehow this was math. But he, like the, one of the things that stuck with me was how like this particular teacher described the lottery, and he said that statistically speaking, buying a lottery ticket does not actually appreciably increase your chances of winning. So that you have virtually the same chances of winning mathematically if you have no ticket than if you even have one.
Because there's so many, you have a 0.0000000, probably 23.1% chance of winning.
You actually have, I think this is something, I read this someplace else, you actually have a better chance of becoming president, of course, like by a wide margin, I think, of becoming president than of winning the lottery.
Wow.
Which is...
Wait, that doesn't make any sense. We got one president choice every 4 years, but more than one every 4 years, someone wins the lottery, right?
Yeah, but way more people try.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Wait a minute.
Well, I don't
know. Isn't that comparing apples and oranges?
It may be. I only know that I read something like that someplace.
You can do anything with statistics and be like, yo, you have more of a chance of winning the lottery than you do by getting a black eye from a giraffe's ball sack.
That's probably true.
Six people went to Africa, got, you know, then just extrapolate the math of how many people didn't get hit in the head by a giraffe's ball sack. It's apples and oranges.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
I heard it's like 1 in 7 million or something, you know, which is so negligible that, you know. Anyway, I always wonder if you can get a scheme of like owning, you know, one of those machines that prints the tickets and then seeing if you could like, you know, buy like 4 million tickets and have that thing printing tickets noon tonight. Because if it's $300 million and then you spend $4 million, because each line is like cost $1.
Oh yeah.
So I wonder if like, well, if there's a 1 in 7 million chance, if you bought 7 million tickets each at for $1 and the prize is $300 million, you know what I'm saying?
There was a, speaking of like lottery, like graft, I guess you would call that.
Mm-hmm.
Like this was a long, like lotteries have been around for a really long time, and I remember there was this. I reading about this thing. There was a lottery in France. This was like 2 centuries ago or something like that. At the time, mm-hmm. they didn't really work out all the possibilities of what somebody could do to exploit the system, but somebody figured out you could buy so many tickets and guarantee victory at a profit.
Uh-huh.
And so, now you can't do that, like outside of, like, extreme methods, I suppose.
Yeah.
But at the time, somebody was able to do that, and that seems, like, crazy to me.
Yeah. And it, also in France, Napoleon rises to the ranks he did.
He was probably the guy who did it.
Things are backward over there. They just leave a lotto with loopholes and expect that no one's gonna fucking figure it out. So what was your upbringing like, Calder, that made you growing up in Arizona and now you're in Los Angeles doing comedy? What kind of seeds got planted in your head in Arizona, and what was the culture like growing up?
I don't feel as if the culture I grew up in was quite what it seems that I see now. It felt very ordinary, and I've never really felt like my upbringing was all that remarkable by comparison with other people who I know. I never personally was especially outgoing, and so to the extent that I'm, what I was growing up affected me now. I was withdrawn, and things sort of just brewed internally over all that time.
You were an introvert.
Yeah.
And you were an observer, and you were getting thoughts together.
Yeah. Not that I never had friends and never did things, but I was, yeah, very much an introverted person.
Yeah. And then you learned ways to be social via theater games and improv and stuff like that, and that kind of...
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Starting to do improv with Monkey Butler and subsequently with more entities was, I think, what really made the big difference for me, because to that point I still knew very few people and did very little, and through that like single incident. It's speaking of that, Malcolm Gladwell is who we were thinking of earlier, was the author.
Oh, yes. Of Outliers.
Speaking of, like, circumstances, like, that happen and how it affects you, like, when I moved to L.A. for about a whole year, I knew, like, one person and did almost nothing in that time. And then I had the house I was living in got foreclosed on, so the people who owned it, they lost the house to the bank, and the bank started, you know, it was getting weird, and so I had to move out. And so I find someone on Craigslist who could have been a maniac, but who I moved in with and who turned out to be into improv, and he like coaxes me into doing improv classes. Like, I didn't want to go. I had studied video editing in school because studying directing would have meant taking acting classes. I really didn't want to perform. He talks me into it, and because of that coincidental, like, incident of the bank foreclosing on a duplex I was living in, I meet this guy. This guy introduces me to these classes introduce me to all these other people, and everything I've had in, like, the last 4 years, like, everything you, like, good in life, basically, that has been new in that time period has been because of that single act.
Wow. So you feel like there was just a little fork in the road that kind of went, hey, maybe do this or not, and then that little one little incident, you know?
Yeah, and that's crazy to me to think of the fact that I could have moved in with someone else, or that the people who owned the house I was living in, like, did not get in over their heads on a mortgage.
Yeah, and I became friends with you and Monkey Butler, and I was like, man, this guy says some weird shit. He's funny. He cracks me up. So
think of that. We wouldn't be talking.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I wouldn't have known you if you didn't have your house foreclosed on. Some kind of flop house you were living in. It sounds like a bad situation.
It was a weird spot. It really was. It was a place where each one of us that lived in this place, and there were several bedrooms in there, each one of us, like, we weren't bound to each other. We were bound to the landlord, so that each individual bedroom was a separate lease.
Right.
And that meant, like, it was very transient, so that, you know, like, there were people would move in, and you would meet them, and you would exchange names and shake hands, and that would be it. Like, yeah. They would be gone.
Yeah.
Some people were gone in a matter of weeks. Some people, like, were there the whole time I was there. There was someone who moved in, and then he just disappeared. Like, yeah, he didn't pay rent anymore.
What if he was murdered? Nobody checked up on it.
There was no body. It was just that.
Exactly. Like, he was murdered, and they did a good job of hiding it, the body.
I won't venture any guesses as to what his fate was, but I know that eventually the landlord unlocked his bedroom and threw out his stuff, and that was the end of him.
He could have been murdered, and, you know, his family doesn't know where he is. He's a runaway, and then the landlord's like, yeah, shit, is he still in here? Yeah, and just throws out the door. Then the bank comes in. There's a shootout. Crazy. Another thing we're working on together after Monkey Butler is a little project I've been working on a long time called Damien Shadows. You play a character called Wilhelm Skeptisch.
Wilhelm Skeptisch. If you would agree, perhaps, that Wilhelm Skeptisch has a mental stability somewhat akin to the fellow we were just speaking of.
Yes. you play... So tell me about Wilhelm Skeptisch and what's he like? What's he doing?
Well, he's a bizarre character. Like, his salient character trait is, as his name suggests, of skepticism. Mm-hmm. And so he has a way of doubting, like, anything in life, basically. But it seems as if the more positive it is, the less he seems to like it.
He's like a German guy who is basically going through clips of pseudo-scientific people like Damien Shadows. Damien Shadows is putting together a web series where he ghost hunts. And according to Wilhelm Skeptisch, that is pseudoscience. They're a bunch of deluded idiots walking around ghost hunting, fooling themselves that they're actually finding ghosts. And so his perspective is just, he just starts ripping into them with different clips, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Wilhelm adheres, like, exclusively, really, to, like, the principles of science. And so anything that, anything, like, such as what Damien Shadows is doing that he feels cannot be verified by pure, cold-hearted science is to be disregarded.
Right, right, right. So it's debunking mid Wilhelm Skeptisch. He's debunking Damien Shadows. Damien Shadows is going to premiere 420, and then 4 weeks from then is... So every Saturday we're going to release you a new episode, and then 4 weeks from then, Wilhelm Skeptisch episode's going to air. So how did you prepare? I must say, me and Ian Longway, we look at it the night before, the script, maybe, and then we run through it a couple times, and then we improv stuff to throw each other off, and then there's a lot of outtakes, and we giggle. And the director, Ted, our director of photography, is always very aggravated that we're not prepared, we're not off book. You came in totally prepared, knew all your lines. What was your preparation for getting into the mindset of Wilhelm Skeptisch?
Well, like you said, I worked pretty hard at trying to be totally off book on my lines. There's always going to be an occasional slip up, but I feel as if the more set you are on the words of dialogue, the more, you know, when you have that comfort there, then you can actually start to do things beyond simply regurgitating the lines.
Yeah, and you brought a lot of energy to it. You were screaming. You were very upset with the pseudoscience in Damien Shadows. It was great, man.
Yeah, if there's anything I bring to the table apart from being able to remember something that I read, it's, you know, that I can bring a lot of volume and energy.
And yeah, just unhinged. There's something about you that's like a little too cruel, but in a whimsical way. Just looking at you, it's hard not to love you. You got a mustache, you got a big curly fro. It's just fun. I originally actually thought that Wilhelm Skeptisch was like an army guy. I imagined him with a crew cut. And so originally I said, hey, Calder, can you shave off like your big curly fro maybe? I was thinking it would be, and what did you tell me?
I said no. I rejected that possibility like instantly.
Yeah, I think you said vanity killed the lion, I believe, and so I have to deny your request of shaving my head because I love these golden locks. You know what, Calder? You were right. Looking at your golden locks right now with your mustache, I was proved wrong, actually.
I'm delighted that you were won over. I find that many people are ultimately worn down by their beauty.
Yeah, well, I've accepted it. Because we were talking. At first, I emailed you, like, hey, could you and then we had a conversation face-to-face, and you're like, oh, I kind of want to keep my hair. And then I was looking at the hair, and then there was blowing in the wind, and the sun and the moon together reflected beautiful angles off your locks. And I'm like, I can't shave this. I want the world to see, you know? I want everyone on Funny or Die who's going to watch this to just be blown away by those locks.
How romantically you describe it.
Have you ever just, like, thought of being like, you know, Fabio's not doing, like, the romance cover novels anymore?
I could do that. Naturally, it would involve a little bit of creative license on the physique.
Yeah, well, they can just paint abs on you. Yeah. But I'm just saying, if they could try and recreate the...
Oh, sure.
The curls.
It's funny that you bring it up, if this isn't getting too far afield. Something that... speaking of... And vanity also, since you mentioned that like a lot of people, I'm prone to Googling myself.
Yeah.
Just to see what's out there.
Yeah, you want to see if anyone's sending bad tweets about Calder Hallbrook? Who's talking shit?
Well, so, you know, more and more what turns up when I Google myself is stuff that's actually pertaining to me. But that's not always the case exactly. Like, my first name is uncommon, but my first name and my last name both appear in things. There's one place that I can think of offhand where my, like, the name Calder Holbrook appears in its entirety. So there's...
Wow.
I think it's a romance novel.
That is in reference... Is a character in a romance
novel? Yes. So there's a novel about vampires in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And it's some kind of a romance novel, and so there's a character called Dr. Calder Holbrook, who I think is a Civil War vampire.
Wow. Yeah, they actually trace back his lineage, and he was a Civil War vampire. And there's a lot of blood to go around during the Civil War, so, like, yeah, I know, like, the Civil War was sad for a lot of families, but, like, vampires back then were fat, you know, they were, that was the golden years of them. A lot of... bodies going around.
Yeah, if you saw the instant classic Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Mm-hmm.
That's a documentary. And if you're a vampire back then and you just kill a family, someone walks by, a burnout family, they go, oh, Civil War.
Sure,
not vampire attack.
No, absolutely.
No one's going to investigate that shit.
The sheer numbers of the carnage were such that, and like the nature of forensics at the time, the law as it stood in those days, it was probably way, way easier for a vampire to hide his crimes.
Yeah. And the South back then, like, you know how there's driving right-of-way laws where, like, if you... you know, get to an intersection, whoever's to the left of you or whatever, you know, gets the turn first, whatever that thing is, the right-of-way laws.
Four-way.
Yeah. Well, because black people weren't, like, considered people, like, in court, you know, they didn't have much of a right-of-way as far as, you know, in court, like, a white man's always gets the first of the right of way as far as truth goes down in the court system, too.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I'm just saying, like you're saying, like the law back then was all...
Sure, sure.
You know, what did the nearest landowning white man say about the situation?
Yeah, if the landowner is a vampire, then think about that.
Oh my god, he's unstoppable. Blah, it is my white landowning opinion, blah, that I didn't murder anybody.
I think that, like, one of the terrible, everyone just thought, oh, if you speak in this sort of, like, Transylvanian, Romanian accent, oh, you're a vampire.
Right. But, well, I guess there was a lot of, like, southern accents back then that were very polished and, oh, dear, oh, I do declare. And if you started doing the blah, blah thing... might stand out a bit.
I think my absolute favorite, it's incredible, like, what a diversity of accents there will be in a confined area, like in England or in the South. And in the South, I think my absolute favorite accent has got to be that sort of Savannah effete theatrical type.
Yeah, like a Tennessee Williams
kind
of thing.
Yeah, exactly, right, yeah. It's just, there's this incredible, like, beautiful fragility to it that it's like if you have like a little glass figurine that will just shatter to pieces if you lay a finger on it, but it's,
and I need a lot of slaves to maintain my lifestyle, darling. Oh, Charles' advances were full of, I don't know.
Goodness gracious, it's so very hot out here.
Yeah. I love the aristocracy because it's like some sort of polished thing of just blatant racism, and their lifestyles and their polished accents has been, you know, made on the backs of, you know, extortionism from their, you know, landowner.
Do you think that it was an overt act of racism to wear those all white linen suits?
Like to be the whitest person ever. There is nothing black about me, I do declare. Like Colonel Sanders,
yeah,
in that
exactly.
Outfit.
Well, I think that it's one of those things where some things I think that people did once upon a time were specifically designed to show the world that not only do I not have to work, I couldn't if I tried. So that, like you're wearing this pristine white suit that would get filthy if you, like, even stood up out of your chair.
It's a class thing. It's saying, I'm the type of guy that doesn't have to do any work, you know.
It's really, I'm reading this book by F. Scott Fitzgerald, and it's one of those books where it's all about these super wealthy, like, New York elite social types, and, like, to think that there was ever a time or a group of people in any time where the idea of working for your money was so loathsome that anyone who actually had a trade was, like, lower than low, so that to them, like, even being a doctor... was practically as bad as just, like, scrounging for rags. Like,
yeah, they're just cushed on their investments. They're just do-nothing racists who never get an honest ear. No one tells them to fuck you right to their face. The Queen of England is one of those people who's never worked a day in her life. She's one of these people.
She's somebody who, since you brought her up twice, it seems
I bring
to me,
her up all the time.
Well,
on my podcast.
It seems to me like not that I like have incredible amounts of sympathy for someone who I don't think so very much of her. But then I'm also like I think to myself, well, what life could she have had for herself, like in what she was born into?
Yeah, that is interesting. There was this one king, I forget what his name is, but he would always, you know, that ancient guy who would go and wear peasant clothes and go around and hobble and talk to peasants and ask what they thought of the king, and then he would make changes. And he would set up education systems for just spread it around. It's that thing of if Kim Jong-il is spending 99% of his stipend from, you know, the bankers to just wrangle fear around, if he's spending 99% of it on himself, like, if you were king, would you give 50% to yourself and 50% to the people? That would elevate their status. You know, they would all get medical care and food, and you know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess.
Look at the division of labor and how money's distributed throughout a culture.
Yeah, if he had any, like, really compelling personal reason to do anything for the people, I don't know. In America, there are elements that, you know, were they to be handed the country, we would be every bit as bad as, like, the worst regimes that exist now or that have ever existed. We're fortunate that our system, at least, if, you know, if it's in poor condition now, at least it's not in the hands of even worse people.
Right.
But that you know, like, in each of us, like, if the right spots are prodded, probably we would be pretty bad people.
Yeah, you got to look at human nature. If you're born in a society where, as a soldier, you can just abuse a harem of 10-year-old boys to tell you to suck your dick anytime you want them to, I don't know. I'm saying, hopefully, you'd be the one to go, you know, I know we've been doing this culture thing, like, thousands of years and thousands of... My father's father was a child cocksucker. His father's father was a child cocksucker. And then later on, a soldier who got his... You know?
I like to think that I would be able to stand up against that.
Yeah.
But an unjust system is not easy to stand up against.
Right.
That's one where it should be a clear-cut case of speaking out, I would hope. But
and also it's that thing of, like, if you were a Nazi, would you just go Auf Wiedersehen and just close a gas chamber with, you know, there's a person who actually just went, I'm closing the door, and, you know, did that. What if you, that was your job, and they said, hey, by the way, we're gonna give you a lovely outfit, you're gonna be set for life, you are the door closer, you close the door and people get in and they're gassed, whatever, but it's a good gig, you know. $20 an hour. There you go.
$20.
It's easy.
One of those quotes, and let me state for anyone who's listening that I despise quotes, and I don't care for
quote. What a great quote. Put on your Twitter, Calder Hall book, quote, I despise quotes.
Yeah, I don't care for, it would really be something if that caught fire as a quote. I don't care for quotes and people who, like, spread them around to the exclusion of their own thinking, or who, you know, will try to find wisdom in a single line as opposed to the work that one line is from.
Right.
But
like whenever you look at a Woody Allen quote, it's like, oh, P.S. I put my dick in my adopted daughter.
Yeah, there's, well, for every quote, there's a context, whether or not it's an objectionable character trait, or whether it's just what's around that line in a book. But one of the things that I think about sometimes, and it's, I don't remember if this was traced to a particular person, because there are a lot of lines where they love to put it to whatever wise person is popular.
Too many caveats. What's the quote, man?
They say all that it takes for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. You know, I forget who that's supposed to be from, but I think to myself, well, you know, it's very easy to pin, like, America's racist history on the most cartoonishly evil racists that we know of.
Well, Colonel Sanders, because he had an all-white suit, because there was nothing black about him. But go on.
Well, yeah, so, you know, you can say, if it wasn't for the most horribly, overtly, cartoonishly racist people, then everything would have been great. But what I think you got to think about is that probably, you know, there were a lot of people who you would like them, and they would be a great guy, like, and everything, well, things were generally okay about them, except for the fact that they tolerated the system.
Yeah, and they didn't stand up. Rise up, people. We're starting a cult with the Highway Diary podcast. I have to thank my guest, Calder Hallbrook. What a gracious guest. What an interesting mind. Where can people, see you perform?
I, as you said, perform with Monkey Butler, and you can keep abreast if I may give some addresses of their shows at monkeybutlercomedy.com.
Mm-hmm.
I also perform with Mrs. Belvedere, and they can be found through Facebook and Twitter. Just search Mrs. Belvedere, and my own efforts writing-wise could be located at Calder Holbrook on Twitter, and Vessel of Knowledge is my blog.
Wow.
So I've got a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is just pouring out information. You get on his Twitter feed, get hooked up to him, and, you know, start getting Calder Hallbrook's thoughts implanted in your mind via a blog. That is his psychic tendrils getting themselves to you.
Oh, man, tendrils.
Yeah, that's a Duncan Trussell-ism. Nice. I like his podcast. Shout out to Duncan Trussell. And thanks, Calder Hallbrook.
Sure thing, sir.
All right, cool.
That's another episode of the Highway Diary, the motherfucking bag. Anyway, I'm going to be at Flappers April 25th, 7:30, and May 14th, 7:30, erichollerbach.com. And look, everyone who's listening to this, send me a Facebook message. I want some feedback on the show. This has been episode 23, super show, packed full of guests. You know. What I want from you is some feedback. Positive or negative, whatever you're thinking about, send me a little message. All right, see you next Tuesday.